Noon straight up with Gresham Fourier on Boston and New England Sports Original WEEI. Apparently some Patriot players are going to be talking down at either camp today or OTAs, whatever it is that's going on right now. Joining us now as he does each and every Tuesday to talk about everything Patriots, it's our guy Tommy Curran of NBC Sports Boston. Tommy, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Andrew. Hello, Christian.
Hello, Tommy.
Tommy, in 1,000 years, would you have bet that on an idle Sunday night, a bunch of the collected members of the New England Patriots would get on national television and ruthlessly make fun of each other? What do you make of the Brady roast? That was something.
I enjoyed the hell out of it. It's funny because my expectations were so low that I didn't get to it at the outset. My brother said, you better turn this on. This is unbelievable. So I jumped in, and I was very happy I did. I mean, it was long, but I kind of didn't want it to end. I mean, I enjoyed the hell out of it. You got the way people talk when there are no cameras on, there's nobody else in the room, and they talk that way to the entire nation, actually beyond what you would talk about. Honestly, I mean, the gloves were completely off in a way that they aren't even, I mean, there were things I would, you would never say to people, and they said it in front of the country.
Tom, when I even heard Brady was doing this and Kevin Hart mentioned this at the very beginning, like, why would you do this, Tom? Why you asked for it? Here it goes. Like, why do you think he really did this? Like, what was the benefit? What did he get out of it? Like, what was the goal?
Money.
So they paid him. Closure. Okay.
Well, they paid him, but he also produced it. If you watch to the end, at the end, it said he was the executive producer. 199 Productions was part of what was done. So I think it helps his other businesses, and it continues to humanize him and break another brand, I think, for him as an entity. I mean, it's pretty obvious now that he is, and this really came clear in 2016. When he won the 5th Super Bowl, and one of the first things I was told by folks close to him, well, this changes everything now. Now he's got 5 Super Bowls and no one's done this, and he's going to do things differently. And he proceeded to with the TB12 stuff. So I think he's always had an eye on what am I going to be when I grow up? And NFL owner, production magnate, commentator. He doesn't want to just golf. So clearly, he has his eyes on the next thing continually.
Tommy Curran of NBC Sports Boston here with Gresham Fourier talking about everything, the Patriots and the Brady roast and all that. And Tommy, I said to Fourier yesterday, I was like, oh boy, look out. How in the world is this Tom Brady ceremony down at Gillette? A completely different exercise, by the way. Everyone admits that. How in the world are they going to dress that up to be anywhere near as entertaining as what we saw on Sunday? Are you hearing anything? Someone even jokingly sent us a text. What are they going to do? Are they going to give him a statue? They give him a bridge? They give him a street? Is the pressure now on the Patriots to come up with a cool presentation for 70,000 people watching Tom Brady walk into the Patriots Hall of Fame?
I think the pressure was on prior to it. Have an event that warrants folks showing up on a June afternoon to witness something and honor him in a way that they didn't do during the season, which was a little bit anticlimactic when they had him out at the opener to basically say, yeah, come back. We'll do something better in June. I was like, what? So, unveiling. But, it's funny having seen, and obviously we're just in the afterglow of it, but having seen this representation of all the principal actors in it on Sunday, I wonder if it lightens things even greater to make it a more fun experience as opposed to button down. And, we can't hear any more about the best decision you ever made.
Yep.
That story. I don't want to hear it anymore. I don't want to hear it. It's enough. Give me something new and different. And the pressure is on for them to somehow provide that.
I'm telling you, guess that ass. The great bit.
Guess that ass.
I don't know why.
It's got to be considered now.
It's right after the roast. Guess that ass feels like a real option now.
Well, I seeing Copen sit back there on the roast and not be able to say anything, I don't know if the guess that ass would necessarily work. By the way, Tommy, did you notice like the amount of people that were apparently sitting up there like saying nothing? I saw some kind of thing today on Joel McHale reacting to, and I'm like, Joel McHale was.
Well, he
up
was
there?
In the. He wasn't in the back. He was he on front? Stage. I thought he was on like in the audience.
Oh, was he like in the? There apparently must have been. It felt like, Tommy, there were like 50 other people that could have pulled up on stage if somebody had to go to the bathroom and they needed a fill in.
Yeah, I got to be honest. I don't even know who Joel McHale is.
Talk Soup.
Wow. Yeah, Talk Soup. How about that?
And then
he's on some kind of animal show.
Watching that when the guy with the skunk hair stuff.
And there you go. Oh, yeah, when Greg Kinnear, I think it was, when he went into movies, I think. Yeah. Fourier knows Greg Kinnear. They were up for the same role, but he got it, and Fourier ended up here. So our buddy Tom Kern is with us. Tommy, the general manager interviews are beginning, and already two people have politely told the Patriots, "Yeah, thanks, but no thanks." How are they going to thread this needle here of satisfying the NFL, yet what I think will be a line of people who might say, "Hell no, I'm not coming in for a sham interview." Don't you all remember Brian Flores?
Yeah, I don't understand what the exercise is. And, you know, I was just putting together some thoughts for the Tom Curran Patriots Talk podcast. And in doing so, you know, Bill Belichick, over the course of time, 15, 18 years, earned the right with head-scratching decisions and unconventional ways of doing things to have people suspend disbelief or to say, look, he knows what he's doing. This makes sense. I get it. Well, I don't get it, but eventually I'll understand the logic behind it. Now, some of that goodwill was winnowed away over the last 8 years, but Bill earned that. I don't have any concept of what purpose this serves to have this exercise after having allowed Elliot Wolf to be the final say for the third overall pick, to run free agency, and to run the entire draft. It doesn't make any visible sense, and only when you have individuals from both the Bengals and the Cardinals turning down interviews, it's not going to cost you wins and losses in September and October. But it's just not a great look when people are saying, no, thanks, I don't want to talk to you about your opportunity, regardless of the reason why. It's just a headline on PFT that comes out and says, this guy turns down interview. And Ben Volen reported that, as far as he knows, the Patriots have already satisfied the Rooney Rule with having people in. So it makes even less sense. If the Rooney Rule is satisfied, which is what Ben Volen reported, what are you doing?
So wait, the Rooney Rule is for executives also?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Yeah, because that was my next question. We just answered, because I was like, are they doing it just to satisfy some rule? Is it okay for them just to say, all right, we've seen enough, we don't even need to interview anybody, then just hire Elliot Wolf?
Yes.
Right, that would make the most sense.
It's like, you went on the honeymoon, you got married, you went on the honeymoon, now you're back home and you're like, you know what, I think I might want to talk to some other prospective partners. What? We're done. So to me, again, it's head-scratching. And again, Bill earned, over the course of time, the latitude to do head-scratching things. And the Crafts would acknowledge over the course of time that we don't know what he's doing, but we trust him and we give him the authority to do things on his own that we may not necessarily understand what the outcome and the aim is. I just don't think that right now the Crafts are at the same spot where you can say, well, they're just doing this and you don't question it. It's not going to cost them wins and losses, but what's the point? Articulate what the point is.
Tommy, I know that it's been released, or at least let out there, that the media will be able to have eyes on rookie minicamp. If there was one camp that I thought Mayo might keep closed a la Bill, it would be this one, considering the scrutiny on the number 3 pick. Was this kind of part of the plan all along, that it was, yep, it's Mayo and he's just going to open things up? Is this still the reaction of the other guy did it this way, we're going to do it this way? is this maybe the right thing for someone like Drake May, where clearly all eyes are going to be on him, whether he's standing on the bench or out on the field?
Yeah, I would have to check and make sure that we've never had access to rookie minicamp ever. I think that we have in the past.
Okay.
Had access. I'm not sure if it's league mandated that we have to have one day of it. But yeah, I look forward to seeing May. I look forward to seeing the division of, you know, tutelage. Who's in charge of standing next to Drake May most of the time and being in his ear? It was interesting because for a long time with Mac Jones, it was a guy named Evan Rothstein, who was Matt Patricia quarterbacks analytics guy that he brought with him from Detroit, and he spent a ton of time alongside Mac Jones. I'm wondering if it's McCartney, the quarterback's coach, or if it's Ben McAdoo. I would presume, and this is just a guess, I would presume it's going to be a lot of Ben McAdoo working with both May and Joe Milton, you know, continually with them on the sides. But it'll be interesting in a lot of ways. What kind of stuff are they installing and implementing? And it's just a tiny little cameo to be on the field where it's an introduction. Here's how we line up. Here's how we do this. Here's how we do that. They're not going to necessarily be putting in a whole mess of plays, but it'll be interesting to see who is with whom and how are things being instructed.
So I know a couple players are talking right now. One of them is Christian Gonzalez. Is he like one of the most important players for this defense, when you talk about, okay, reclaiming, doing the same thing they did, how important is he to this defense?
I think he's the best player on their defense. He and Barmore are the cornerstones, and that's why I think that that's a good re-signing for them, and hopefully he continues to gradually get better and better, because I think he's already really good and dominant, talking about Barmore. But I think if you have a shutdown corner and a dominant defensive tackle, all you really need is an edge rusher, and they have that to an extent in Judon, who's getting older. And they could use, I think, another one. I think they could also use another corner opposite Gonzalez. But I think those are two absolute cornerstones of your defense going through for the rest of the decade, hopefully, because I think Gonzalez has the potential to be that good. We saw it even in the first four games, how good he was and how surprisingly physical he was after we heard so much, you know, in the aftermath of the draft, that he's not a real physical guy. But I think we saw evidence to the contrary throughout camp and then even in the first three or four games when he was out there.
Yeah, I think the only thing with me with Gonzalez was it was like, you know, God, it's only four games. I mean, nobody really got to really kind of put some tendencies on him and observe him the right way. And I wonder if we're building him up to be better than he actually is. I mean, I'm not saying that's the case, but I think that would be my only fear, that he played so well so quickly and then he was gone, that maybe we're setting the expectations too high for him.
We could be. I'm sure he's going to have days to forget, the same way Kyle Lahr, Stephon Gilmore, or Darrell Revis, and those are obviously two out of three are Hall of Famers. Gilmore might have a shot as having been a former Defensive Player of the Year, a long shot, but a shot. Yeah, that would be lofty praise to put him in that group. But you and I both know that you can tell really quickly if somebody is unique and upper echelon in that vein as a cornerback. And the way he moves is just so smooth, so without frenetic movement, so fast that it's inevitable that anything he screws up will not be because he's physically overmatched. But I'm sure he'll have days where you're like, this is supposed to be the guy? But I would think long-term, he's going to be at least a Pro Bowl defender year in and year out.
If Caden Wallace can't flip from right to left tackle, what's the then plan?
I would think Okorafor, the Chucks there from Pittsburgh, is probably the Band-Aid. And that's a lot to ask for a third-round tackle to come into the season as your starting left tackle. And I think that's why Elliot Wolf referred to Chucks there as the player that they're going to rely on if the season had begun in mid-April as the left tackle. But I think good news on the Calvin Anderson front. I think, you know, now we know that he, in an interview, explained that he had malaria last year, contracted from a trip to Africa in the off season, which certainly, you know, thank God that he's recovered from that, because it was extremely dire, it seemed, and was on the field. So maybe they can get from him in his second year with the team what they expected in their first.
That story is wild, by the way. I think that was Christopher Price in the Globe, I think, wrote up a story about that. He had almost died like twice. It was insane.
Somewhere I envisioned Corey Dillon saying, "That bastard Belichick wouldn't even tell people the guy was sick." Remember that? The whole protect me, tell people I'm injured.
Because we were wondering
about Calvin Anderson in all seriousness, and that's like, it's kind of a big deal. It's not like, oh, he pulled a hamstring.
No,
the guy's got malaria, for crying out loud.
It's a crazy story.
Yeah, I mean, you end up lumping him in over the course of the year with such a bad free agent signing. He couldn't even get on the field. Well, there's a reason. And the flip side is, I always thought Bill kind of enjoyed not telling people so that the speculation would go. And then later on, I go, yeah, he had malaria. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, in there.
Okay, Bill, just tell us what the issue is. So we're not, you know, let people in on the secret.
So now he can use, like, it's not like he's got malaria or anything like that. It's like Calvin had. I mean, he should be fine.
It's not like with heart surgery.
Yeah. He can use the woman. It's not like I've seen the worst guy had malaria.
Oh, man. Tommy, thank you, friend. We appreciate it. We'll catch you next week.
All right, guys. Have a great day.
That's it. There we go. There goes Tommy Kern of NBC Sports Boston.